It's a trap. Hello and welcome to episode number 69 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
Carson, just the other day, I was thinking about the game of X-Wing, as I often do, and I said, you know what? One pilot needs a boost. I was thinking Biggs Darklighter needs a boost. He's not seeing nearly enough competitive play. Am I right?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, with the Rebel TIE Fighter, we got a bit of a boost there with Captain Rex synergizing with Biggs, as well as Thane Kyrell. But I just kind of thought there wasn't enough ships to synergize with him. I think he needed a bit more.
Well, and on top of that, I mean, Biggs's ability is pretty good, but I was like, what if we could give that kind of ability to basically any ship with an elite pilot talent? What if there was a card that did that? Wouldn't that be nice?
I think that would be really generous and selfless of you to give that to the Rebel faction.
For people who can't pick up on our very, very subtle sarcasm here, we are, of course, talking about some of the cards that were spoiled in the recently released Ozatuk gunship preview article. Of course, we know that Biggs is seeing a fair bit of competitive play, so that's what we're going to focus in on today.
Tim, you ruin the sarcasm when you tell them it's sarcasm.
All right, so last week, Fantasy Flight released another preview article, this time spoiling another ship from Wave 11, the Ozatuk gunship. We saw both of its named pilots now, as well as some new upgrade cards.
Yeah, so just a refresher, the Ozatuk gunship is a 3 attack dice, 1 agility, 6 hull points and 3 shields rebel ship with a 180 firing arc. So like the YV-666, it has 2 auxiliary firing arcs on either side. And also it's got the reinforce action.
Yeah, so the reinforce action actually originates in X-Wing Epic, and they've modified it here to work with the small base ship. Normally in an Epic game, you'd reinforce one side of your Epic ship so that it gets to add an evade result every time it gets attacked on that side. Well, they've modified it to work on a small base ship where when you take the reinforce token, it's double-sided, one representing your fore section and one representing your aft section. So when you reinforce the fore section, if you get attacked by a ship inside your firing arc, so on the front end, you can add an evade result. And if you reinforce the aft section, if you get attacked by a ship outside of your firing arc, you can add an evade result on each of those attacks.
And so to complete our general perspective of how the Ozatuk works, we now got its maneuver dial.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty cool because they've been generally hesitant to show the maneuver dial in preview articles, especially early articles well before the ship releases. So it's pretty cool to know what we're looking at here. It's, I think, much what I would have expected.
It's pretty good maneuver dial. So for a wide arced ship, you would expect to be a little bit limited. Now, it doesn't have any K turns or S loops, but it does have 1 straights, 1 banks of green. It has all of the 2s, all of the 3s, and it's 2 and 3 straight are green, and then it has a 4 straight and a red 5 straight.
So this is a lot like the YV-666 in that that ship also didn't have a way to turn around, but it compensated for that by having that extra wide firing arc where those hard turns you could perform would effectively allow you to keep your ship in the battle and keep arc on your opponent's ships.
Right, and so having both the 2-turn and 3-turn, I think it was really good to have open here. I mean, because when you have a 180-degree arc, you really, that's all you need to keep in the fight is do a 90-degree turn. It's kind of a bit too much if you have the K-turn ability. So with 9 hit points, 1 agility, this is pretty comparable to like a B-Wing or ARC-170, where it's got a lot of hit points, not much agility, and its main goal is to just be a efficient jousting platform who can soak up some damage and just try and out-exchange its opponents.
Well, and it does have an advantage over other Rebel jousting ships in that it does have that reinforce action, which is a huge help, especially for a ship with 1 agility die, where you're not going to get a lot of reliable defense from 1 agility die, which even if you have a focus token, you can only mod it for 1 attack, even if you roll that focus. Whereas that reinforce action allows you to add evade results basically every time you get shot at. So if you're facing a bunch of ships and you take that reinforce to the fore section of your ship, you're going to be adding an evade result each time you get attacked, which makes you that much less desirable of a target. And I think the 9 total hit points is also important because it makes it very unlikely that this ship will get taken down in a single volley of fire. When you start to see hit point totals between 5 and 8, there's a good chance that those ships can get cleared off the board, especially if they have low agility, get cleared off the board in a single round of fire.
Yeah, I think durability is definitely the name of the game when it comes to the Azatuk gunship. That's really its competitive edge, is it's going to just out-endure its opponents. And I think we see that even more with some of the named pilots. So we know the generic pilot skill 1 comes in at 24 points with just the two crew slots. We also got Lelric pilot skill 5 with an elite pilot talent slot at 28 points.
Yeah, his ability reads, when another friendly ship at range 1 is defending, you may spend 1 reinforce token. If you do, the defender adds 1 evade result.
So this is pretty cool, where you're taking your reinforce token and are able to defend your ship, but if your opponent opts to select your other ships, well then now Lelric can spend that reinforce token and throw the evade over there.
Yeah, because like I said, that reinforce token can be a big deterrent for making your opponent not shoot Lelric. If they choose to shoot another ship, suddenly you can add an evade result to their defense. And then your opponent might be like, well, now I can shoot Lelric, but they've already split their fire at least once, which is good. Anytime you can make your opponent split their fire so that they can't focus in on one of your ships, that's generally beneficial to you.
Right, and this ability, especially with that range one restriction, really makes you think of Biggs Darklighter, who is great at assisting other friendly rebel ships at range one, and also could really benefit from a free evade thrown out.
Well, yeah, and they mentioned that in the article. There's really good synergy here between Lelric and Biggs. They're both at pilot skill 5. They both have attack deterring abilities. So your opponent can't target a ship at range one of Biggs if they can shoot Biggs instead. And then suddenly you've got Lelric by his side, who can take that reinforced token and then can spend that reinforced token to add an evade when your opponent has to shoot Biggs.
So then if you throw some other big synergy ships in the mix, like Captain Rex with the suppressive fire condition, that after you've attacked a ship, they roll one less attack die. So now their attack's reduced, they have to shoot Biggs, and Lelric's throwing a free evade over there. You could even throw in Thane Kyrell with Jin and Jan, Jin Erso, Jan Ors, throwing out a bunch of focus tokens and evade tokens whenever your opponent shoots a ship, not Thane. So now you're really tanking Biggs.
And that would be a list where you don't have a very strongly modified offense, but you're going more for the long-term endurance play, where you're just going to outlast your opponent by having your ships stay on the board way longer.
I think Lelric's ability, though, is good enough that I think could see some use outside of Biggs. I mean, keeping your regen ships alive. In some ways, you could use it as an alternative to Biggs, where they don't necessarily have to target Lelric, but if they don't, then there's a drawback because you're going to get a free evade on that other ship.
Well, and it's hard to run both of these guys in one list because they're both fairly expensive. Biggs comes in at 25 points, and typically people run R4, D6 on him to add even more to his defense. So he comes in at 26 typically, and the base cost for Lelric is 28. So you're already looking at, you know, 54 points there. So that's a, you know, more than half of your list right off the bat.
Now, it does get really crazy because Lelric does have an elite pilot talent slot, and you could use the new elite pilot talent here.
Yeah, so they revealed a new elite pilot talent card called Selflessness. And this is basically, I guess, a Biggs-like effect, I would say. It's small ship only rebel, 1 point elite pilot talent. And it reads, when a friendly ship at range one is hit by an attack, you may discard this card to suffer all uncanceled hit results instead of the target ship. So there's some interesting synergy, I think, here with Selflessness and Biggs Darklighter with R4-D6, specifically R4-D6's ability. Both of these cards trigger after you get hit, which for you guys at home following along on your timing chart for performing an attack in the X-Wing FAQ, this takes place during the compare result step, which is step 6 and then part 4, determine whether the defender is hit by an attack or the attack misses. So you would trigger the R4-D6 card, which allows you to receive stress tokens to cancel any uncanceled hit results until there are 2 hit results remaining. And then Selflessness triggers when a friendly ship at range 1 is hit by an attack. You may discard this card to suffer all uncanceled hit results instead of the target ship. So since these both occur in the space between part 4 of step 6 and the deal damage step, step 7, I would assume that you could trigger both of these abilities in a single round.
Yeah, traditionally when one player has two abilities triggering at the same window, the player gets to choose how to order those and how they resolve. So that's really cool. Especially when you throw, say, draw their fire on top of this as well, where another ship is taking a critical result off, right? Because R4-D6 is not able to remove crit results.
And neither is Selflessness.
Right. So say you're taking a range 1 Fen Rao shot and they roll 4 hits and a crit. Well, then R4-D6 is able to bring that down to 2 hits and a crit. And then Selflessness throws 2 of the damage off somewhere else. And then the critical result, you could draw their fire away or just take one shield on Biggs. I think there's definitely some room to play with both draw their fire and selflessness and synergy, where you're really spreading the damage off, maybe on some regen platforms. That sounds particularly exciting.
Yeah, passing that damage off to a ship with shields that can then get those shields back with an R2-D2 or an R5-P9 would be a pretty neat combo. They also revealed the Pilot Skill 7 named Azatuk gunship pilot, Wolf Waro. This is a ship also with an elite pilot talent coming in at 30 points, and his ability reads, when attacking, if you have no shields and at least one damage card assigned to you, roll one additional attack die. So, Carson, we've seen abilities like this that allow you to roll additional attack die. We have ships like Zeta Leader, a.k.a. High Roller, who is a TIE FO that can, when attacking, if you are not stressed, you may receive a stress token and roll an additional attack die. We also have one of my current favorite ships, Pure Sabak, the TIE Striker, that when it has one or fewer damage cards, it rolls an additional attack die. So this ability actually kind of goes in the different direction, where Pure Sabak triggers if you haven't taken much damage. This ability triggers when you have actually taken damage.
Yeah, exactly the opposite of Sabak. And there's some interesting mind games with Wolfaroo, where you could take selflessness and, you know, deal the damage to yourself the easy way. Or you can just put them in vulnerable situations and kind of dare your opponent to target him.
Yeah, because he's got this threat where if you don't put a veteran instinct on him, if you just keep him at pilot skill 7, your opponent might attack him in a round and do enough damage that suddenly he's rolling an extra attack die on the return shot. So that's a consideration to have there and might be a deterrent to actually shooting at him.
Now, one thing to consider, though, and this is kind of similar to the Pure Sabak problem, is both these ships don't have access to target lock. So even if you are rolling a large dice pool without that kind of modification, it's going to be a bit more inconsistent. So when you're building with Wolf Waro, you kind of want to keep that in mind. Maybe something like M9G8 to give him a little bit of a reroll, or Predator.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think you need some sort of non-focus token-based offensive modification here. People get around that with Pure Sabak by using TIE SFs with the targeting synchronizer tech upgrade, allowing Pure Sabak to use other ships' target locks, but Wolf Waro definitely needs something like a Predator.
I mean, you could just give him the modification targeting computer. That works too.
Yeah, that's actually a decent idea here if you're trying to get some reliable offense.
Oh, I guess you could Rage too. That might be fun. Raging Wookiee, that's pretty flavorful.
Oh yeah, throw Rage on there and then an Inspiring Recruit so that you can clear both of those stress tokens in a single move.
And maybe even Chopper.
Oh yeah, so you can take actions while you're stressed. See, we're already building him out there. Still going to come in pretty expensive since his base cost is 30. You're starting to get up to the 40-point range. But if synergized with Biggs Darklighter, which I think would be a pretty good combo here, he could really actually lay out some damage.
Absolutely. And before we finish up here, we had one last card spoiled. We had the Breach Specialist, another one-point crew, which reads, when you are dealt a face-up damage card, you may spend one reinforced token to flip it face down without resolving its effect. If you do, until the end of the round, when you are dealt a face-up damage card, flip it face down without resolving its effect. This gives your Azatuk a great way to mitigate that damage taken. The reinforce is a nice way to slow down the damage taken, but still, especially with the high dice pools of damage being thrown around right now, players are going to overcome your one green die plus reinforce. The ship's going to take some damage.
Well, and what's nice about this card on the Azatuk is that you'll get double value out of that reinforced token, most likely. Since you took it, you're probably adding an evade result to your roll, so the damage that got through might deal a crit, and then you're spending it in order to flip those crits face down.
Yeah, and having access to those two crew slots is pretty huge. That's really their only way to get kind of synergies in their builds. Whether you want to go full-on on the defense, the Breach Specialist definitely helps. You could use up both your slots on the Wookiee Commandos, giving you some offensive modification while still having access to your reinforced token. So there's a lot of different ways you can load those out. Of course, the Rebels have a great selection of efficient crew. You got Chopper at 0. Rey at 2 points gives you great action efficiency. You also could go for C-3PO, give yourself even more passive modification with that one green dice. So definitely a lot of options for the Azatuk, even with such a limited upgrade bar.
Unfortunately, right now, Breach Specialist only works on the Azatuk in standard competitive X-Wing, since that's the only ship that can take a reinforced token. Do you think this upgrade card has some application for Epic?
Yeah, it's tough because in Epic, you don't have too many crew slots, and there's a lot of really great choices. But at one point, I think there is some use there, where it maybe doesn't fit into every Epic ship build, but sometimes when you're making those tough few point choices, being a few points cheaper helps a lot.
So Carson, now that we have some more information, some upgrades and pilots coming in this expansion, how are you feeling about the Azatuk? Neither you or I have played Rebels actively for a little while. Do you feel like this is something that could bring you back to the Rebel faction?
So the Azatuk serves a role in being an efficient platform. It's a solid threat to point ratio, but doesn't really have that many repositioning actions, which are one of my favorite aspects of the game right now. There's definitely something to be said for guessing your opponent's maneuver, setting up all of your low pilot skill ships in a way where they can't escape your trap and firing a lot of guns on a single target. The Azatuk definitely helps the Rebels in that and synergize that strategy. It's just not something that I currently enjoy. I like being the one trying to dodge the trap.
I think this ship very firmly settles itself into the Biggs List archetype. So Biggs is one of the most popular, if not the most popular, Rebel ships to fly right now. And every Biggs List by necessity has a similar flying style where you have to keep your ships together to be triggering Biggs' ability. To me, this ship slots in there pretty good with that synergy, but the problem is that's not an exciting list archetype to me because generally your strategy is the same. You don't have a lot of versatility there. There's not a lot of room to play. The popular Scum and Villainy list, for whatever people want to say about a Tawny Mind Link, is they can be generally adaptive and you can try to figure out how to beat your opponent's strategy, how to beat the trap, as you said.
Now, one thing that is appealing about the Azatuk is often you will get to roll your dice, whereas if you're flying something like a B-Wing, your arc gets dodged a lot and you don't even get to roll your attack dice. So the Azatuk has that going for it, where at least you'll often be shooting.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, like, it's an interesting ship. There's some cool stuff about it. I just don't feel like that's the style list I want to go for right now. All right, listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. It's time to announce our raffle winners for the month of June. In order to be eligible for this raffle, you needed to have become a backer of the show at any level by the end of May.
So this month, we were giving away two Alt Art Ray promo cards from the 2017 World's Championship.
And we have two winners. So the first winner is Brian Shannon. Congratulations, Brian.
And our second winner is Gene Beamer. So thank you both, Brian and Gene, for supporting the show.
We'll be announcing our July raffle prizes next week. We don't want to say what they are right now, but, you know, we have store championship season going on right now. We might have some cool store championship stuff to give away. I don't want to give any spoilers quite yet.
Yeah, I've done okay. I might have some loot to share.
A huge thank you to everyone who's already supported the show on Patreon. If you'd like to become a backer and get some of those awesome mirrored acrylic target locks, go on to patreon.com/radioTCX and become a supporter of the show today.
And now back to the cast.
So in the midst of the store championship season now, we kind of had a release that came a little bit under the radar. Last week, they released the Sea Rock Epic expansion that, of course, comes along with that little sick interceptor and a bunch of upgrade cards.
Yep, came complete with everything spoiled except for a blue line.
There's some debate there, though. A lot of the preview images didn't have the dividing line for the fore and aft sections. So who knows if they intended to put it on there. They definitely intended to put one on there.
Printing errors aside, we did get all of the sweet new sick pilots, the Pulse Ray Shield, the Light Sick title, Socotro Visago, and Jabba Hutt, all for our standard X-Wing games.
Yeah, and you got some immediate value out of this expansion at the Dork Den Store Championship in Mankato this past weekend. You were able to slot in that Socotro Visago crew card into your scum list.
Yeah, so I kept the same Paratani 2.0 list I've been flying forever. Fenrau with the Atani Mind Link, Concord Dawn title, auto thrusters, Asajj with Atani Mind Link and Latsrazi, and then Paulo Gadali with Atani Mind Link, dorsal turret, Stygian particle accelerator, and cloaking device. Didn't really use the crew slot on Paulo, so a 0 point crew Socotro Visago got to slot in there at no cost to me, which was good because I didn't have any points for any upgrades.
And this will happen from time to time when a new expansion comes out where it'll take something that's already good, like an existing ship archetype or list, and then a pretty cheap upgrade will come out and just, it might not be a huge benefit, but it gives some kind of benefit. We saw that when we got the collision detector system for Zero, which then boosted every Palpatine shuttle just a little bit by letting them avoid some damage.
Well, when you take Polyb, Atani, the already best list in the meta right now.
Carson said it.
It's won two store championships. And then you just add, for 0 points, an upgrade. It's great. Take the best list, make it a little bit better. So Cicatro reads, for 0 points, scum only, at the start of the end phase, you may discard this card to replace a face-up illicit upgrade card you have equipped with another upgrade card of the same type of equal or fewer squad points. So I have the cloaking device equipped, and at any point at the end of the turn, I can swap that out for another illicit card. This is particularly good with cloaking device, where my hawk can be cloaked, and the check for when the cloaking device breaks is at the end of the turn, which Cicatro triggering at the start of the end phase happens before then. So before it would break, I can swap it out for another illicit, and then I no longer have the cloaking device to check if it breaks. So my hawk could stay cloaked forever or until I decloak, and then I can get another illicit like a feedback array or black market slicer tools, stay cloaked, keep moving around and slipping some damage through that way.
Yeah, actually at the Dork Den Star Championship, I played a player who was using that exact strategy. He had a Polyb Gadolahi with cloaking device equipped and Cicatro Visago, and he didn't even have a turret on the hawk. The hawk's whole purpose was to get cloaked, swap out that cloaking device for a feedback array, and then just stay cloaked so you're quite a bit more defensible and deal damage with the feedback array, which helped in him beating me.
That's unfortunate. I personally think it's better to use it as more of a plan B, where you want to attack with your Hawk's turret. I think 3 out of my 4 games I won there were Polyb dealt out really key critical damage with that dorsal turret attack. I definitely value the offense I get from having my Hawk decloaked at the right time. But after he takes some damage, he becomes a bit of a liability because I need him alive to keep up the Atani synergy. And there, cloaking up and maintaining the cloak, I think, is pretty sweet.
Now, Carson, I've got two things I want to say about Cicatro. In one way, I like him, and in one way, I don't. So the reason I like him is I like that versatility you have. And like you said, it's more of a plan B strategy, swapping out your illicit to something different. But it can be clutch, depending on the circumstance you're in. And what I like about your list is, in a lot of ways, it's a toolbox list where you have a lot of different assets and abilities that you can adapt depending on the situation and change your strategy around. What I don't like about Cicatro for competitive play is it puts a lot of burden on your opponent to know what cards you can swap to and all the crazy different things you could do with that Cicatro card.
Yeah, and I was upfront about that with my opponents. When I showed them my list at the start of the game, I also said, here's the pile of illicits I have with me I might swap out. And that was free knowledge for if they ever wanted to check that during any turn, which I think is probably the appropriate way to do that. I mean, there's really not that many illicits even in existence. There's like 7 or 8. But still, there's things you forget about, like the potential to grab a dead man switch if your hawk only has 1 or 2 hits left.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my problem with this is it puts a lot of burden on your opponent to know about cards that aren't necessarily on your squad list. Because right now, there's no ruling about how you need to present this information, or even if you need to share with your opponent the potential cards you could swap to. So that presents a weird burden of knowledge for your opponent to know, like, oh, there is like 8 of these illicit cards that he might switch to. Which one is he going to do? What do they all do? And it's really unfortunate that Fantasy Flight hasn't added information on how to handle these situations in their FAQ or tournament rules.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, the funny thing with Cicatro was there was all those options, but I actually never ended up using him in that tournament. I mean, there's definitely times where I considered it, but where I was waiting for Polyb to take damage, and he either was like full up or went down in one round of shooting and I didn't have the opportunity to swap it out. It went okay. Got the win at the end, so.
Yeah, so maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I mean, like, it might not be a problem with Polyb right now or with Hawks in general, but since the crew slot and the illicit slot are pretty common in the Scum and Villainy faction, I feel like there's some opportunities in the future where this might become an issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit more perpetuated with large base, where there's, I think, more illicits that are large base only. I mean, getting a slam or a rigged cargo chute are definitely options you're going to want to consider. And you're going to play around those pretty differently.
Well, Cicatro wasn't the only new thing that came in the C-Rock expansion. We also saw a bunch of new Sick Interceptor pilots. We've talked about them a lot. We've talked about Pulse Ray Shield before. Now that we're starting to get those on the table, Carson, how are you feeling about the new pilots or Pulse Ray Shield?
So I think the new pilots are all pretty good. I feel like Pulse Ray Shield's okay. I don't like it that much with Atani lists. I feel like especially when you're running six, like you need to use those K turns, which means your list will be stressed. And then there's the liability if you're doing a white one forward by ionizing yourself from the Pulse Ray Shield, where you're really going to run out of your action efficiency. I think it's a bit better if you're not running Atani than the heavy six with the Pulse Rays, I think, are a bit more versatile. But when you're getting stress from your other ships and then you're ionizing yourself because you took damage, I think that becomes a bit of a hindrance. But I really like all the abilities of the ships. Inaldra is just such a great value. And even when you're running the lightweight sick, where you don't have access to Pulse Ray, so you just have the use of the ability once, with the six big defensive dice pool, there's still value where, okay, even at a range three shot, if I'm rolling like four dice and I blank out, if you have more than one damage on your attack, I'm going to spend that shield to reroll because often I'm going to get better results. But there's always the risk, so it's fun. I think Inaldra's really good.
And she comes in so cheap too, so that it might not even be a defensive decision. She might not be getting shot at because she's only 20-something points, where then you can spend that shield to reroll your attack dice and push a lot of damage without a target lock.
I really like Quinn Jass too when you're running cheaper munitions, like either a plasma torpedo or a proton rocket, kind of those three-point missiles or torpedoes.
Quinn Jast, of course. At the start of the combat phase, you may receive a weapons disabled token to flip one of your discarded torpedo or missile upgrade cards face up.
Decent. I just don't want them to be too expensive there, because they still aren't that defensive, even with the regen. So you don't want to put too many points into these things. But it packs a pretty nice punch, and often it's not a big downside to the turn after you shoot, take the weapons disabled token, because with their primary attacks, they're probably not doing too much. So you want to be shooting that munition every other turn.
See, I really like the Pilot Skill 7 Genesis Red. This is 19 points. After you acquire a target lock, assign focus and evade tokens to your ship until you have the same number of each token as the lock ship. I think he's a really cool card. I think he is going to be very relevant. I just don't think he's going to be relevant in the immediate future.
Yeah, and I've been running her with Tawny because that's nice synergy. But I think it's probably better with Veteran Instincts, where more of your opponent's ships have activated and have green tokens for you to trigger with Genesis Red's ability of whenever you take a target lock on a ship, you get all of the green tokens they have.
Yeah, so it's to your benefit to have as many of them activated as possible. And at Pilot Skill 9, if you have some kind of bid, it's a pretty easy guarantee that you'll be moving last, if not really late, in the activation phase. So I think this ship will be relevant, just not in the immediate future, while Atani Mind Link and Pilot Skill 9 Fen Rouse with really strong bids are a dominating force. If those ever go away, I can see this card being a really great ace counter.
Yeah, if the traditional push the limit Imperial Aces come back again, I think Genesis Red's really great there.
Well, can't you just imagine someone running the Inquisitor with Title and Push the Limit and Auto Thrusters, and then it takes a target lock, gets a free evade from the Title, and then pushes the limit for a focus token? And it receives a stress because it's pushing the limit, whereas then Genesis Red just has to target lock it, gets all those tokens, but without the stress.
Yeah, I think that's pretty powerful. And I have my sweet black and red painted sick for her, so I've been flying a decent amount of Genesis Red because of that. So hopefully those push the limit Imperial Aces come back out.
Yeah, so a lot of interesting stuff in the C-Rock expansion. I don't know how relevant it's going to be in the immediate future. We're still seeing an Atani Mind Link-dominated metagame with now some Imperials cropping up, at least in the Minnesota area.
Yeah, and if you think you've solved how to play these new Seeks, let us know, because we're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, throw us your list builds either on our Facebook page or tweet at us at Radio TCX Podcast. All right, guys, before we close out, we've just got a couple of shout-outs. We made the call out to our Radio TCX listeners. If anyone wins a store championship, we want to know about it and share your victory with the rest of the Radio TCX community. We got a couple messages from some store championship winners.
Yep, from the Dork Den. Little last-minute write-in.
Yes, a shout-out to our dear friend Carson Ray, who won his second store championship. He is now tied with me for winning two store championships in one store championship season.
And I've won there 2 years in a row now. And I just want to shout-out to all the Mankato players. Great bunch. Really great games. Especially Tate Rose there at the end. That was very close in the final game. Really well flown.
Well, Carson, beyond your two store championship winners, we've got some Radio TCXers I'd like to talk about. First off, Justin Brown won the Arkham Games store championship in Ankeny, Iowa. He was running a quick draw and backdraft. They were both had adaptability, fire control, sensor cluster, lightweight frame, and special ops training, along with a Captain Yor Lambda-class shuttle with collision detector and Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah, I particularly like sensor cluster on quick draw, where you really want to control the damage done to quick draw, and you want to make sure it's just one shield dealt at a time. They don't have evade tokens, which are usually the easiest way to do that. And so sensor cluster gives you a lot of choice on how you use your focus on defense. Obviously, you can use it traditionally to modify the focus results, or you can use sensor cluster to spend the focus and turn a blank into an evade. And that should enable you to get the full value out of your quick draw abilities.
Plus, it helps that he had the extra defensive bonus from Emperor Palpatine. And we have another Radio TCX Store Championship winner. This time, Patrick Murphy won the Millennium Games Store Championship in Rochester, New York. He was flying Dash and Miranda.
Yeah, so Patrick was flying Dash Rendar with Lone Wolf, Heavy Laser Cannon, the Ray Crew, and the Outrider title. And then Miranda Donnie with Twin Laser Turret, Extra Munitions, Sabine Wren, Connor Net, Thermal Detonators, and the Advanced Slam.
So a huge congratulations to Justin and Patrick. Congratulations, guys, on winning those store championships. If any of you other Radio TCX listeners win a store championship, please let us know. You can message us on Facebook or through Patreon, and we would love to give you a shout-out on the podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please consider going on to Facebook.com/RadioTCX and liking our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review, along with a comment saying what you like about the show and whether people might be interested in listening.
This week, we want to give a special shout out to Big Wave, who said we helped with the daunting task of being a new player getting into the X-Wing game, as well as he enjoyed how we remind you what the upgrade cards do, which is always difficult when you're in an audio format.
Thanks for the shout-out, Big Wave, and a huge thank you to everyone who's left a review. We really appreciate it.
If you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radioTCX and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
And good luck on your store championships.
It's a trap!